This is terrible. And this is something I really want to talk about.
Yeah.
I'm so glad. I just thought about this. Because we went to the Humane Society of the county in Florida that she lives.
Okay.
And she got this dog, and the dog is okay. It was unfortunately, it was a what's the dog that they just keep using for breeding? One of those puppy.
Oh, puppy mill puppy, yeah.
Yeah, well, although he wasn't a puppy, he's like 8 years old, but he's gorgeous.
Well, what kind?
He's a Papillon. And he was gorgeous. So yeah. Obviously he was stripping all the female dogs for 7 years straight. But he's scared to death of everything.
Oh.
So it's hard, and it wasn't the right dog for an older woman. So, but what? And she's moving, so that she doesn't want to take the dog into the place. But one of her aides was great with him. So we went, and I called up the place. She goes, "Oh, we have to call him up to transfer ownership."
Right. Remember the Ellen story?
Yes.
Okay.
Well, guess what?
Same deal.
Worse.
What?
Not only is it, I don't know if it's the same. I don't know all the particulars about the Ellen story, but I'll tell you, this is what they did to a woman of over 85 years, okay?
Uh-huh.
And this is not nice. So I called them up, and the woman says, you know, we just wanted to, oh, no problem, we're just going to, we'll sign all the paperwork, she fills out an application, then we'll just do the transfer of ownership, and that's that. Just come in and sign all the paperwork. I said, okay, you know, because you want to do the right thing. Right? That's
right.
All right. Ellen didn't do the right thing. She didn't do the transfer of ownership. Right?
Oh, yeah. Well, Ellen, she just gave it to her.
Right.
And they had to give it back. Right. Okay.
Because what it is they retain ownership. You're just the permanent custodian of this dog.
Hmm.
So I was going to go bring her personal aide plus Trudy down there to sign the paperwork. And Trudy goes, oh, maybe we should bring the dog. Maybe they just want to make sure the dog hasn't been mistreated, they might want to see the dog. So I called them up. I said, would you like us to bring the dog? They said, yeah. I said, okay, we brought the dog. And I figured they were going to look and check to make sure it wasn't mistreated and all that. Well, we bring the dog. The nurses, they came and filled out all the paperwork. And then they didn't even tell me this. They asked Trudy to sign a release that she's, you know, and she should not be signing papers for herself anyway.
Right.
So, they asked her to sign a release saying she's giving up her rights to the dog. You know, basically, she thought she was signing a paper giving her rights
over to
the other one.
Right.
And then they came to me, and I was holding the dog, and they said, oh, can we see the dog? I said, sure. And she starts to take it. I said, do you need the leash? And the woman goes, is it yours? I said, yeah. She goes, oh, well, we don't need the leash. And then this is the same woman, by the way. I went over while they were filling out the paperwork. I asked, behind the counter, there was a million, like, little dogs.
Oh, yeah.
And I said, oh, can I come over, can I see and pet the children?
I don't know.
You know?
Yeah.
She goes, you don't have them. It's like, well, neither does anyone else who's coming to adopt them, you bitch.
Yeah, right.
Ooh, can I say that word?
Sure. And proudly.
Sure, because she really was. And not in the female dog distinction.
Yeah, no, I get it. Yeah.
Anyway, so she takes a dog and we're just waiting, and they say, okay, you can go. It's like, what do you mean we can go? Can we have, we're waiting to take the dog back.
Yeah.
Because we want to keep the dog with Trudy until she moves.
Right.
Oh, you can't have the dog back. What do you mean you can't have? It turns out that was they just snapped the dog away from us. And then we call, and it's because they have permanent ownership, and what they did, and I think this is very racial, that they didn't, they disapproved the AIDS thing, and they said, you know, and it's all about money, because they'll sit and they asked $250.
Wait, slow this down a little bit. She signed away the thing, and they took the dog, and then you said, hey, wait, you know, we're going to hold on to the dog until we can give it to the aide. Where was the aide? Why didn't the aide come down?
The aide was there.
So they said they didn't want this aide getting the dog?
I guess so. It was, like, really weird, because they said, oh, it'll take a couple of days to process the application.
Yeah.
And then they told us, no, she wasn't approved.
Did they give a reason?
Nope.
What did she do?
We called the police. And the police couldn't do anything.
Because I would have started, I mean, I don't know what I would have done, but I would have. You would have seen things
this
breaking.
Is like, when I go down to the
street, jaws. Yeah.
I want to start a civil suit in small claims court. Not for anything, but they should justify. why they took a dog away from an 85-plus-year-old woman. What was she going to abscond? And we did everything they wanted us to. We did everything right.
Yeah.
You know? Had we not done everything right, they probably wouldn't have ever caught on.
Okay, well, now, who knows? Who's to know that you're giving a dog away to somebody?
Yeah.
Who's to know? That is absolutely... I'm amazed you actually left the place. You know, and so say, you know, we're going to stay here until you give us a goddamn dog back.
We got the police to come down. They couldn't do anything.
Well, what did you expect the police
to
do?
Flight.
Yeah. What did you expect the police to do, though?
Well, I wanted to write some sort of report, but he didn't really want to. But even the policeman told me, he came up to me, he goes, look, he goes, I wouldn't get a dog here. I want to own my dog. He goes, you don't own your dog when you get it.
I guess that's what they really mean.
Yeah. They had the right to take it away.
Now, how long had your stepmom had...
About 6 months.
That's a long... You bond with a dog over... You can bond with a dog in a week.
She loved that dog every morning.
She must have been distraught.
Yeah. My stepmother, she wanted a glass of water. They wouldn't give her one. I can't... And they don't even... It's like... Then another person comes in with a dog to turn in. They said they don't have space. Meanwhile, we were going to take care of this dog for...
What? I hope you told those people don't, you know, turn right around and go somewhere else. And
I didn't want to, at that point, we were still waiting to see what was going on.
Yeah. I mean, by the way, what is the woman's name you were dealing with? The bitch. What was her name?
I think her name was Charlotte.
You don't remember, you don't remember her last name or anything like that? Because let's call her out. Let's say some names.
She was executive director. She's the director of...
I'm going to find her. Let me do a little Googling here.
Okay.
And can you gargle some Googling music?
She's the Humane Society of, oh, my God. I think it's Broward County.
Okay. Oh, I'm going to the computer here. Humane Society Broward. Of Broward County, humanebroward.com. Let's see if all Charlotte's here.
And then when I got up to speak to her,
yeah,
she told me, I told her to say one thing like this, and I just, you know how I, with my hands?
Yeah.
She goes, don't you point your finger at me. And then she ran into her office and wouldn't come out with the dog. We didn't even get to say goodbye to the dog.
Were they in Fort Lauderdale? Or?
No.
Although maybe it might be the overall.
Maybe it's Palm Beach County.
Oh.
You know where they are?
Where?
They're in Boca Raton.
Let me see.
By Boca Raton.
Checking. Thank you for holding.
Yeah. Oh, you should have been a 411. 411 operator.
Tri-County Humane Society of Boca Raton?
Mm-hmm.
That might be it. There are no kill, right?
Yes.
Well, that's why they were full. I mean, I understand that.
Yeah.
Okay, here we are. We need your help. Let's see.
Who's the director?
Oh, we got a whole bunch of people. Now, I hope this is the actual people. The founder and the CEO is someone named Jeanette Christos.
That's her. Jeanette.
Oh, not Charlotte. Jeanette Christos. She has Christ in her last name, and this is the way she behaves. Now, granted, I wasn't there, so there may be another side to the story, but Jeanette Christos, if you're listening...
Screw you!
Put your hand on the radio so we can give you a nice big shock. Yeah. Man... Not nice. Not well. We're calling her out, and anybody don't go to the. Unfortunately, but there are no kill shelters.
No.
So you want to tell people to go there.
It's a very hard thing to do, because you know. But really, they don't treat people right there.
Let's see if I can get a picture of this girl.
And she's a woman. She's a little sleazebag in her like probably 50s, who looks like she's 100.
Yeah. Right.
But. Really, it was just such a shock. You know, we never expected not to bring the dog back.
Well, everybody, if you want to call tomorrow and ask
and
about
then,
their policies.
Oh, by the way, and also, this dog needed a ton of medical care, which we paid for. There was about $1,500 worth of medical care. He has two teeth left.
Oh, I know,
teeth
yeah.
Are bad.
Yeah. Well, yeah. We know where that's coming from with our dogs, but... Well, that I can't. I mean,
no, but that you know, they give you the dogs, and they don't fix the dogs up there. They have the dog for a year. It truly fixed the dog up.
Wow,
that dog into perfect health.
I'm glad you're going back to Florida next week. I mean, you know, go there and give them hell, as it were, or do something. You know,
I don't know what I'm going to do, but I think I want to make I'd love for Trudy to put in a civil action against them.
Right.
Because, you know, just small claims. So I'd love for it to go on Judge Judy. I'd like them to be called out for the actions they do, because really, they shouldn't do that to people.
You're listening to WGBB Freeport. You're listening to AM 1240 or AM 1240 WGBB.com. You're listening to Dave's Gone By. You're obviously a very lonely person. Greetings from Long Island, where every highway is a sunrise. It's time for Dave's Gone By, an hour of comedy, talk, and music brought to you by Total Theater, with your host, Dave Lefkowitz. You've never heard anything like it, so sit back, relax, squeal if you must. Here's the host of Dave's Gone By, Dave!
Tropical hot dog night! I shoot flamingos in a fruit fight! Every color of day, swirling around at night.
Well, there goes the Daverhood. Welcome, 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 everybody, especially mommies out there, to the May 11th, 2008 episode number 272 of Dave's Gone By. With me, Dave Lefkowitz, radio host, journalist, personality, lunatic, whatever you want to call me, and son of a rather wonderful mother. And then I've got another mother's son here with me in the studio, my usual guest co-host, the delightful, the delicious, and the dog-loving Jeff Goodman.
And I'd like to be also be called Man About Town and Bon Vivant.
You want to be a Bon Vivant?
Yes.
You really? More like a kind of a bonbon vivant. I'm sorry. Don't know why.
I'm more of a Cinnabon vivant.
Oh, very nicely done. Well, and you're looking chipper. I have to say, you got this nice shirt on. You got this red shirt with white stripes. You're looking nice.
Trudy hates this shirt.
Really? Why?
She wanted to burn it.
You look like you should be on a Venice canal rowing and singing with a little boater hat. And, yeah, you look good. Nice to say that. You know, you look bright-eyed and bushy. I also like you with long hair. I saw that
last
week, too.
That's what she said, too, but I'm going to get it all cut off in time.
No! Well, Tyler, because it's 188 degrees in the shade.
It gets, and then, if I don't do it, it looks like this, and I become a mad scientist.
Well, you don't want to look like Sweeney Todd.
And, and I don't want to be, you know, what's his name? Stills National? Who's the one?
Oh, David Crosby. No, you don't want that.
No.
But the fact that you got it and it goes back on you, it goes in the back of your head, it's going to
roll
your shoulders.
Well, that's because I'm doing this.
Yeah, but it looks, I like it. I do like it the way it is. I mean, it's a shame to lose it.
Bald spot, like the big one.
Little bald spot. It's most, well.
It's like mostly bald.
You're bolder than me, yeah. And that's saying bolder than I, excuse me. Sorry.
You're pretty much a cue ball.
What do you mean I'm a cue ball? I'm a cue ball? What are you talking about? Look at that. I got,
well, you got little wings. You got the yarmulke mark here, and then the bald spot's covered.
Yeah.
Forehead's meet in the yarmulke mark. You have like this, I don't know, you have like a parenthesis, like quotation
marks. Yeah, well,
marks,
yeah, we have different kinds
quotations.
Of
what are the ones that, you know, that go like that? What are those marks?
Question marks?
No.
What?
You put one on, it goes like this.
Okay.
Like that.
I think that's a clitoris.
And then the other side, if it goes like that.
Yeah, it is a clitoris, actually.
Oh, really?
Except my scalp doesn't smell quite as bad. But, you know, ladies and gentlemen, I don't know what that
There's
means.
There's something fishy here.
Bum-bum-tsh. Ladies and gentlemen, oh, you know, mentioning, speaking of fish.
Yeah.
The name of this program is Rising Damp. The title of this episode of Dave's Gone By is Rising Damp, because special guest of the evening will be Dennis Damp, the book of U.S. government jobs. He wrote the book. The book of U.S. government jobs. Who wrote the book of U.S. government jobs? Tell me, baby, how do I get some work? I can't really go further than that.
And speaking of work,
yeah,
would we like to thank our sponsors?
Well, let me give a little bit more of an explanation of what we're
with
old Dennis.
I knew we had to get the sponsors in quickly.
Oh, we will. I promise that. But Dennis Damp used to work for the government in aerobatics. I think he even worked with NASA or the military.
Did he get
something
fired?
Like that. No, retired. And he couldn't write a book about his experiences and giving people ideas on how to apply and get government jobs, because when you're in the government, there's certain things you cannot write about. So he retired, wrote this book, became a bestseller, and now it's had 10 different consecutive editions He's also written some other books. And so we thought it would be really cool to interview him because times are tough and people are having trouble with keeping their jobs or finding their jobs or paying bills with just one job, or they're afraid of job security.
And
so why not look for a government job?
I also heard that you're going to do your own project on this. You're going to test the validity of his book.
Yeah, I'm testing any kind of validity I can on every possible job site I can find. So government jobs is another option, certainly. And you don't necessarily have to be civil service. I mean, that's kind of an old thing. Not every job requires a civil service exam.
Don't work for the post office. I don't want you shooting people.
I by my third day, I would.
I'm telling
you. You know my personality. I would be killing people within 2.5 days.
What's that zip code?
Right. I asked you to take the box home, tape it yourself. I'm not going to tape. I cannot tape the box for you. I know you're 115 years old. I cannot tape the box for you.
Is there a dog in there, Jeanette?
Wait, oh, I know how I can help you. Here's my mace. You know. Now go away. Go get your nursemaid to bring you home. No, I should not be working in any way for the post office. You know.
Nor for the elderly, I guess.
Or if I go walking along delivering mail and a dog bites me, I shoot the dog, then the owner. That's it. And then I shoot up everybody else on the block.
And then you say they'd like their mail stopped for a while.
That's right. You know, I just open any mail that looks interesting, I would open. Because I wouldn't keep it, but I would like to see if a magazine comes that's got naked people.
Oh, I want
to
read. I want to read that one.
Yeah, right. Come on.
Sometimes I do think that some of my news, my subscriptions were held for a couple of days.
Yeah, somebody else wants to read those things before you get them. They don't want to pay $25 a year. Why should they? It's out there. They don't put them in all.
I know they all want to read my dog fancy.
Is that kind of a sexual reference? I don't know. I don't even know what that means. So anyway.
No, you like the dog fancy, the sexual magazine. I prefer it as for pet products.
Oh, really? Oh, okay. Well, you don't have a pet, do you? You're thinking of getting a dog, but you haven't gotten one yet.
Well, I had a cat for a long time.
Did you really?
I had Luke.
As close as you've gotten to pussy.
I told you about Luke. No, Luke. Shut up. I told you about Luke, like the cat with the credit card and all that.
No, you did not.
My cat got credit card. My cat had better credit than I did at one point.
Yeah. It's just they sent one to him because
he
must have gotten
one
on some list.
Now, this is like in the 80s, the mid to late 80s.
Yeah.
What they would do is you would literally get the credit card in the mail. You know, it's not the phony thing that says your name here.
Yes, I do remember that.
Well, what I did is I got tired of having Luke. I didn't like writing to Purina for stuff, and then I'd get on my name would be on my list. So what I would do is send stuff to either Luke Goodman or whatever, and then whenever mail came for Luke Goodman, I knew it was just garbage.
Right.
Because who's going to write to the cat? So I finally decided, and one is I put Luke T. period cat, C-A-T-T.
Yeah.
Luke the cat.
Right.
Okay? And I got this thing from Citibank, or Chase, or one, I forgot what it was.
Yeah.
I'll be darned if he didn't get a MasterCard. Well, at this point, I don't know why, but my credit wasn't good. So it said, do you want another one? I said, sure, send one for my friend Jeff Goodman.
Wow.
So, but he was the primary on the credit card.
So did you actually be able to use
it? Oh, I used it all the time.
That's brilliant.
And what would happen if I was late for the payments? I'd get calls. Is Luke home? Yeah. Or he can't come to the phone right now. Or he's out. I'm sorry.
Oh, that's fantastic.
They would call for Luke.
Everybody would do that for the credit card companies.
Now
they're
charging
28% interest or whatever they're charging.
Well, I paid every bill. I would never do that. But.
Oh, well. But that's a great way to defraud, you know. Isn't that great that we're talking about shooting people, working for the post office, looking at people's mail, and defrauding the government and credit cards?
But I didn't defraud anyone. I just paid the
moral program.
Luke helped me get my credit back.
See, I told you there's something good about owning a pet.
I love my cat. He was great.
Aw. Anyway, we got to kind of move.
He would sleep next to me. I'd roll over and I'd hear,
Well, yeah. Yeah.
Well, because I roll in my sleep and he couldn't get close enough to me.
Scratch fever right there. Like,
no, he would never scratch me. He would lick me to death. Oh, my God, with a sandpaper tongue. It hurt.
Ow. Ooh. Well, that was, not to put a fine point on it, but that is apparently that was apparently a medieval torture where they would strap someone down, swear to God, and they would get goats to lick the bottoms of people's feet and just keep licking because goats is even more sandpapery
really?
And rough than a cat's tongue. And I mean, you have your feet licked by a goat for a long, long time. It tears the skin off the bottom of your feet. So apparently it's a really horrible torture. Is anybody eating right now? I read that somewhere. The things people think of the torture, it's amazing that minds can work that
way. Is that like waterboarding?
Probably not.
Maybe Dick Cheney should get some goats for people.
Probably. Well, yeah. Dick Cheney, camels.
Dick Cheney's listening to Dave's Gone By going, maybe we'll get some goats to Guantanamo.
Right. Or heck with Guantanamo. Just various places in the United States where there's dissent and people not voting Republican. That's what he needs.
To Hillary's camp.
Yeah, exactly. Anyway, we will have, speaking of, well, rhyming with camp, we have Damp. Janice Damp, the author, on Dave's Gone By.
We went through this.
He's going to be interviewed, though, by Peter Fitzgerald.
Good God help us.
Peter is an occasional visitor to this program.
Oh, as infrequently as possible, please.
The vice president of WGLFAR, WGLFAR, the Woodmere Gay Lesbian Front and Rear. And so he has kind of an agenda in what he does. But he's going to be talking to Dennis Damp about trying to get a job in
government. I can't believe anyone would talk to him.
Amazingly, well, he's a very charming kind of a guy in his way. You know who else is charming? Our sponsors!
Yes.
The sponsors of this radio program, which include Navah Groceries, 1239 Broadway in Hewlett, Long Island. Look for Stephen and ask him about all their great Eastern European delicacies. Everything from nuts to pastas to special desserts to herring to special cheeses.
Did you ever have that bird's nest dessert?
It was good.
Well, it's terrific.
Nummy, nummy.
A lot of pistachio nuts, lots of green stuff.
Well, that's actually more honey. Of a Greek sort of a flyaway thing. Don't call me honey.
Honey?
Thank you. You know who else is a honey? The lovely folks who work at Hewlett Minuteman Press.
Oh, the Copy Kings of Broadway?
1315 Broadway in Hewlett, like 2 blocks from the Navah Groceries.
I know, and in between them is soon to be gone, Lowman
Shoes. They're not one of our sponsors, but certainly Minuteman and Navah are, as is MortgagesRock.com and Performing Arts Insider, the theater magazine, the Bible of Broadway for 65 years. And remember, really, really great price for Dave's Gone By listeners, $115 for 12 issues a year. That's like $60 now, or almost $70 off the regular subscription price. Go to PerformingArtsInsider.com to find out more. And then our final sponsor is
Fancy Schmancy Balloons, where we have ridiculous offers on things, too.
Yeah,
you can get a full bar mitzvah for $462.50.
You mean a full... No, that's not a bar mitzvah with the rabbi, the cantor, and
the full
band.
Our full bar mitzvah package.
Package, which
means...
You get
10 centerpieces, 10 balloon toppers, a sign and board or book. You get a dais arch, you get a dais nameplate, you get 10 centerpieces for your cocktail hour, and...
What's the overall value on that normally? Like,
oh, it's about $750.
So, and you're giving away, not giving away, but you're saying $462.50 for for all of that for this week. If you mention Dave's Gone By, what's the number people need to call?
I don't know, 516-797-3229.
Say it again.
516-797-3229.
Thanks, Schmancy Balloons. That's a pretty great deal. You're saving like $300, people. So call.
And if you subscribe to, and if you make a new subscription to Performing Arts Insider, we'll take an additional $50 off.
Woof! Woof! Think of that. You can make your party look amazing, be it a bar mitzvah or a christening or a wedding or
that'd
a graduation.
$112.50, and you get Performing Arts Insider.
That's pretty neat. So, ladies and gentlemen, call. Ask for Jeff at Fancy Schmancy 797-3229, area code 516. Okay, it's Mother's Day. We've got so much to do. We've got Dennis Stamp with Government Jobs. Peter Fitzgerald is going to be interviewing him. Jeff and I are going to go inside Broadway for theater news and reviews and the end of the 2007-2008 Broadway season. We're going to talk about that, review some shows, and we're going to celebrate our beloved mothers. So, mothers and others and
where's
brothers.
Where's Mamma Mia when you need it?
Yeah, Mamma Mia, Mamma Mia. Love to see you.
Bismillah, no, be learning to go. Ah. I thought I'd just take it. See how I took it in another direction?
Totally.
Isn't it funny?
Yeah, yes, indeed. That was very nicely done. We'll be right back with more of Dave's Gone By right after these messages.
I hate unemployment and I tell you why. I want to keep working till the day I die. I like to work,
I do it well. And when I can't feed my family, Lord, I feel like hell. Lord, give me a job of work to do. Lord, give me a job of work to do. That's all I want, that's all I ask of you.
Well, hello, Aru. This is Peter Fitzgerald here, and I'm so happy. I'm so excited, and not just because in the way that I'm usually excited, but I have a guest, and we're going to be talking about the U.S. government, a place that really doesn't want to acknowledge my existence, but they can't keep me away if I want to get a job. Now, why would I want to work there? Because, well, it's Uncle Sam, and believe me, I've had funnier uncles to deal with in my life than him. So, with us on the phone is Mr. Dennis Damp. I just love his last name already. Dennis Damp. So Dennis, may I call you Dennis?
Absolutely.
Oh, Wiggle. Oh, thank you so much. So you've written a book about how to get jobs in the government. Why did you do this?
Well, I spent 35 years working for Uncle Sam, retired in 2005. And back in 1985, when I started the series, the first of the 10th edition, it was designed basically to help individuals who were approaching the federal government navigate the complex application process and also show them the way on not only where the jobs are, but what's available and how to actually land one from an insider's perspective. And then the new 10th edition goes another step because prior to retirement, due to ethics laws, I wasn't permitted to interject my personal experiences. I can only let people know that I was a federal employee, Dennis Damp, and worked for the government. The new edition, though, is interspersed with all of my personal experiences, which can really help people knock down the barriers to getting a high-paying, secure government job.
So, in other words, now you can be completely unethical. I think that's great. I think that, but what is something that the government would have been afraid of you saying in your book, The Book of U.S. Government Jobs?
It's not necessarily being afraid. It's just that when you're a federal employee working for Uncle Sam, you can't do anything to promote a product.
Oh.
So that's the ethic issue. You can write books and you can do a lot of things, but you can't sell books based on your working with Uncle Sam. Whereas now I'm able to pretty much tell people exactly what it was like and some of the roadblocks that you're going to encounter, I can help you navigate through quite easily.
Well, what's some of the roadblocks, the stumbling blocks, or as I like to say, the hemorrhoids that you might encounter?
The federal sector is pretty much a hidden job market, but it's also almost recession-proof. And why is it a hidden job market? Well, because you may not know this, Pete, but actually 2% of the total civilian workforce 2% of the total civilian workforce are federal employees, and their average salary is $67,000.
Ooga!
But you won't find these jobs advertised in your local Sunday paper. Open it up, and you look. Go to the Help Wanted section, and in New York you have tons of Help Wanted section paper, but you'll be hard-pressed to find a single job.
Well, you know how I'd love to be hard-pressed, but that's something else.
And yet there are 49,000 jobs advertised today on just one of the groups websites that we list as one of the 141 resources for people to go to on federaljobs.net, the companion website to the Book of U.S. Government Jobs. So it's almost like a huge camouflage elephant trying to hide behind a field mouse.
Well, why wouldn't they advertise in the Times or
because they do everything centralized on agency websites. And it's assumed inappropriately, I might add, that people know to go to these locations or to go to your local agency in your community and apply for a job. And actually right now is a great time because of the 2.7 million feds. I was at the leading edge of the baby boomer exodus when I left the federal government back in 2005 at age 55. Well, there's 1.3 million baby boomers that are eligible for regular and early retirement in the federal sector.
So all these jobs, yes.
There's tons of opportunities.
But what about, I've always been told that you couldn't really get anywhere unless you were, quote-unquote, civil service.
Well, actually it is federal civil service, they don't call it that much anymore. It's federal employment. You still hear the civil service tag occasionally, but the federal civil service puts everybody on a level playing field, regardless of your race, national origin,
sexual orientation. Wiggle! Yes.
Yeah, any of that. So to do that, they have a rather complex, sometimes considered convoluted, recruitment process that includes an extensive federal-style resume and other application forms where you have to really depict your work history and educational background to the nth degree and tailor it to what they call a federal job announcement. And they'll actually put out a job announcement for every job that lists the qualifications for the job, where it's going to be, where you're going to be employed, the average salary, and the educational background that's required. So to put everybody in that level playing field, you have to go through the hoop of submitting a federal-style resume, which is totally different than the one-page private sector resume you hear so much about.
So do you have to do a different resume for every single job?
Well, if you're bidding on jobs within the same family, and there's like 30-some families and 900 job occupations,
sure,
in the federal sector, and those occupations, basically, if you're bidding in a similar group, for instance, if you're bidding in the investigative series, the 1800 series, you can use the same resume with some reservation. And that reservation I outline in Chapter 6 of the book of U.S. Government Jobs. You have to look at the qualifications for that position, the special skills and that are required for that job, and duties that are required, and read through them. And if they're a little bit different than the previous job, you have to make sure you include them in the new job federal resume you're applying for.
No, but that's pretty much with every job that you're looking for, even without looking for the government,
sector.
Because it used to be you would do a resume, you'd go to the Xerox shop, you'd make 99 copies, and then the last copy would be one of your butts. And then that was fine. Then you'd send it out, and then maybe a quick little cover letter that you would type up, and you'd mail it. And then it was supposed to get easier with computers. Except now, because it's supposed to be easier, they expect you to tailor every cover letter, every resume, every envelope, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And it's just, so it isn't necessarily either at all. It's just a different kind of labor.
Yes, and Peter, it's a little bit different in the federal sector in that your typical federal-style resume, just for an entry-level position, is 3 to 5 pages with supplemental forms often required.
Oh, my God. I don't need anything like that for someone to enter me, that's for sure. At any level. But, 3 to 5 pages, And how many would you say, let's say you're going for a job, I mean, how many other candidates do you think there are? Are you 1 out of 100, 1 out of 500?
Well, you know, it depends on the job you're applying for. The federal sector is very desirable because it isn't just an average salary of $67,000, but when you add your average annual federal workers' compensation, adding pay plus benefits, is $106,871 for federal workers. In the private sector, it's only $53,000. So,
oh my goodness!
The jobs are very desirable, and the reason there's that huge difference is the benefit package in the federal sector and the fixed annuities that they still offer are unsurpassed today in the private sector. So there's a lot of competition, even though it's a hidden job market. So many people know about it, but there's a lot more that don't know of your listeners or in your listening audience that it's going to open a whole new vista for them to apply for these jobs if they just know where to look.
Well, that sounds like double when you include health care and all that stuff. And believe me, I know from big packages. That's exciting. That's really good. So where can people get your book, the Book of U.S. Government Jobs?
It's available at Barnes & Noble, Borders, Amazon.com. We have a special for your listeners today, too.
Ooh.
If they call up and say that they were on Peter's radio show, and call our toll-free number. It's normally $22.95. We're selling it to your listeners for $18.95. And the toll-free number, and Peter, you may want to write this down, so if anybody calls into the station, it's
1-800-782-7424.
782-7424. It answers 24/7, so they can call anytime, and they will take that. But it's also available at your local bookstore. And I might add,
yeah,
if you don't have the money for the book, you don't have to buy it. It's available at most libraries, and it's important for all job hunters, whether you have the money for the book or not, that you have a resource to go to. And it's recommended by Library Journal. It's reviewed by Library Journal. It was also just nominated for Best Career Book for 2008 and Best Reference Book for 2008.
Nice.
Hi, this is Dennis Stamp, author of the Book of U.S. Government Jobs, and you've been listening to Dave's Gone By on WGBB Radio in Freeport.
So let me ask you something. The other cliche about government jobs is that once you get one, I mean, you were talking about all these people who are going to be retiring and going to Florida and dying and things like that. But is it also true that once you really get it, you have to screw up really bad to lose it?
Well, there's many protections in the federal sector. And one of the big benefits is, you know, in the private sector, only 13% of the private sector is unionized today.
Mm.
65% or more of the federal sector is unionized. There's a lot of protections in the system that prevent you from being forced out for anything other than gross competence, or incompetence, I should say, not
yes.
gross competence.
I can be gross, but you're incompetent.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah.
But, you know, Peter, there's a lot of protections, and that's a good thing for the job applicant. There's also a lot of opportunities that go along with that. I had no option. I joined the military. I didn't join the military. I was drafted in 1968.
Ooh.
That's included in my retirement package. They conclude those years.
Did you see any action? And I don't mean the kind of action I got last night.
No, I was very blessed. I stayed stateside in a support position all throughout Vietnam, at the time in Vietnam. But
you were drinking buddies with George Bush, basically.
Oh, no, not really. I didn't know the gentleman at the time, but I did spend a total of 10 years in the military, transferred to the federal sector after I bid on a position. But I started out at a very low position, at a GS-7, actually a WG-11 position, which is wage grade, and worked my way up to manager of the air traffic control tower at the Greater Pittsburgh Airport, the top of the pay scale in the federal sector. And that's because they offer individuals a lot of upward mobility, training. If you want to get ahead, if you want to relocate, if you want great pay with super benefits, the federal sector is a place you really should explore.
You certainly make it sound so incredibly appealing. I'm going to start applying for all sorts of things tomorrow. But I want to find out a little bit more about Dennis Stamp before we let you go. And I love that last name of yours. When you were an air traffic controller, what was that like? I mean, was that exciting? Did you have terrible problems during the Reagan era? What was that?
Well, I was there during the strike when air traffic went on strike. But I was in the technical operations division, and which meant that my division repaired and maintained the navigation, surveillance, the communications, all the things that are ancillary to traffic control, the radar systems, the control consoles that the air traffic controllers use. So we weren't involved with the strike. We were the maintenance and the repair arm of the federal sector for the FAA.
Did you ever come in one morning and find something and go, oh, my God, this is an accident waiting to happen? Everybody shut down.
You have to be diligent at all times. And there were many times, you know, we were in high-pressure situations. 9/11 was, of course, one of the most significant ones where we had to bring down all the traffic in such a short period of time, and we did it with no accidents. And it was a very dramatic day. I'll never forget that day in my life. And in the federal sector, there's a lot of high responsibility positions in law enforcement and air traffic control and border patrol and so many different areas that EPA, environmental protection, making things green as we're trying to do. You do have those days.
Actually, since you brought it up, and it didn't even occur to me that you would have been working or involved on that day, but I have to ask, because everybody wants to ask this question, but nobody can or does, and why didn't they know that there were 4 missing planes in time to shoot them down, bring them down, do something?
Yeah, there were so many different nuances to that, and they had to scramble the jets to do it. They had to get authorization. Everything happened so fast and in such a short period of time, within an hour, hour and a half after departure, that it was just a madhouse, and we had never experienced anything like that before.
I'm not talking about bringing down all the other planes in America. I'm talking about
four.
The bad four.
Yeah, yeah, and that's what I'm saying. There were just so many different things and so many different levels to go through to authorize that, and I wouldn't be the one to answer that question. I'm not at any level of responsibility that would have even been involved with that.
Because all I know is
military and so forth.
Someone can be going, can be driving to work, and then you know you see on the TV, oh, oops, there's going to be traffic on the BQE. You call them, and then they take a turn, and then there's no, and that takes a minute and a half. They
right.
had an hour and a half in the air, and they still went through the buildings and into the field. I don't get it.
Yeah, it's such a time crunch, and now that's all been pretty much resolved. Now they have authorities inherent with these issues that if they do come up, they can take immediate action. And there's a really great work and initiative between Department of Transportation and DOD, Department of Defense, and military commands that I think now would react much timelier than what had happened in that day.
Well, from your mouth to God's ears and a bunch of other of God's more pleasant body parts. Anyway, we're finishing up our conversation with the delightful Dennis Damp, the author of the book of U.S. Government Jobs. It's the 10th edition of the book. There have been so many of them from Book Haven Press. Available, what's the website again where people can get it?
Federaljobs.net.
Federaljobs.net, as well as your local library, and I'm assuming Amazon and places like that, and Glamazon, which is my particular favorite for books.
Barnes & Noble also.
What is your single best piece of advice for people who want to try and get a government job?
Tailor your federal resume to the job announcement as we outline in Chapter 6, and don't give up with your first rejection. Bid on multiple positions.
Oh, I love multiple positions.
In other words, there's so many different jobs out there. You just have to find them through the websites on federaljobs.net that we link you to. Tailor your job announcement or your resume to the job announcement, and you can make a connection and get an interview.
And what is the best way to get government cheese? I've been wondering about that.
Oh, I can remember standing in line as a young child in the 1950s with my mother for civil defense cheese and powdered eggs. God, I don't even know how to go about doing that today.
Oh, well. Oh, it's a conversation for another time.
There you go.
But I thank you so much for taking the time with
Peter,
us.
Peter, thank you so much for having me, and I certainly wish you and all your listeners a pleasant week ahead.
Wiggle and God bless.
All right. Bye-bye.
On June 14th, the night before the Tonys, catch the 4th Annual WGBB Tony Awards Special, hosted by Dave Lefkowitz, that's me, of Dave's Gone By, co-hosted by theater critic Jeff Goodman and Michael Regal of the New York Post. We'll hear other critics make predictions, show tunes from Xanadu, Young Frankenstein, and more, quizzes, ticket giveaways, all on Saturday, June 14th, 7:30 to 10 p.m., the Tony Special on WGBB, the station that serves your theatrical community. Inside Broadway, brought to you by Total Theater's Performing Arts Insider, your everything theater guide.
This is the end, beautiful friend, the end.
That's right, ladies and gentlemen. This is the end of the Broadway season. The 2007-2008 Broadway season has come to a close with two shows ending the season. One was the revival of Carol Churchill's Top Girls, which got some pretty good reviews. And then another show called Glory Days, which got unbelievably bad reviews and became the first Broadway show to close, open and close, in one night in about 15 years.
I think the last one was the...
The oldest living Confederate widow something.
Right.
That was a few years ago. Maybe that was 5 years ago or something like that, 2003, with Ellen Burstyn in a one-woman show that was 2.5 hours long. I missed that one, but I did not miss Glory Days, and probably give a quick review. But first, let's get to news.
Would it
inside
be a
Broadway.
Quick PU review?
Did you see Glory Days?
No.
No. Oh, well.
But I smelt it from far away.
Smelt it from the circle in the square theater wafting all the way with its sewer scent down the corridors of 42nd, 43rd, 45th
Street. It actually leached
Street.
Into the subway system.
Did it really? I'll bet it. What did you think of the Broadway season as a whole?
A whole?
W-H-O-L-E.
Oh,
yeah. Because it ended, you know, and I thought it was a terrific season.
I think,
I really
it started out as a season of the play, and it ended up with quite a few good musicals.
Come to think of it, that's right. Because in the early part, there were all these play revivals and all these couple of new plays. You had Mauritius by Teresa Rebeck, and you had A Bronx Tale being revived, and Cyrano de Bergerac, and Is He Dead? Yeah. And August Osage County, and a revival of The Homecoming. Yeah, a lot of plays going on.
It was the year of the play.
Mm-hmm. Until, somewhere in the middle of the season,
they said, Gloria, you've got to come.
Well, yeah, but also, so did amazing revivals. I mean, you had terrific revival of Sunday in the Park with George,
mm-hmm.
Gypsy with Patti LuPone, which is, you know, the Gypsy of my lifetime so far, and then South Pacific, which is a beautiful, you know, almost perfect revival. So, those three in one season is an event, mm-hmm. is something to be thrilled and excited about.
Let's not forget the revival, not that it's a musical, but of the Ritz. Only because that was one of my favorites.
Yeah, Ritz was delightful. It was funny. I would put it down for best play revival, certainly more so than The Homecoming that other critics might have liked. But, I mean, it became... And then, as far as new musicals went, it was a little iffy in the early part of the season because you had Xanadu, which was a lot of fun, but the music wasn't new. It was taken from a movie. You had Little Mermaid, which was...
On rollerblades.
Well, yeah, you went from roller skates and Xanadu to rollerblades.
Yeah, that's true. The skates...
People just gliding across the stage.
At least I stopped bungee jumping and talking.
But then you started getting some interesting stuff, like In the Heights moved from off-Broadway. You had... Passing Strange, a wild piece that could as easily fit in a rock club as it could on a Broadway stage. And then Crybaby became something of a sleeper hit for people. The critics were but people are liking that one a lot.
People love it.
And then you have a typical...
I loved it.
I enjoy it quite a lot. We talked about it last week.
Yeah.
In fact, a whole bunch. But, yeah, we both liked it a lot. And then you had A Catered Affair, which is more of an old-fashioned quiet musical that we're going to review...
Yes.
A little later on, and then Glory. I mean, it's just for the most part, it really I thought was a terrific season. I was very very happy to be a Broadway.
I
critic.
Like when your voice cracks like that. Do
Thank
that
you.
Again.
Thank you so much. The Dr. Demento crack. I've been doing it more and more on Dave's Gone By.
Because you're becoming a man finally.
Oh, that's why those hairs are growing. I was wondering about that.
They're not on your head.
Hey, no. Anyway,
only on the palms of your hands.
Well, we've got the Tony Awards going to be... The Tony nominations for the Tony Awards are going to be announced this Tuesday morning on...
from Sardis, aren't they?
May 13th. Is that where they're coming from? They don't normally do that from Sardis. They go somewhere else. Used to be Radio...
They do the show at Radio City.
Yeah, but sorry, they haven't done the Tony thing from Sardis
in
a while. But Drama Desk sometimes comes from Sardis. But anyway, the Lucille Lortel Awards were held this past Monday, and the big winner there was the off-Broadway musical The Adding Machine, that won for Best Musical, Actor, Director, and Lighting. Also, Ted Mann of Circle in the Square won a Career Award, and Primary Stages took an award for overall body of work.
Nice.
Yeah. And let's see, we tend to have a piece of August Osage County news every single week here on Inside Broadway. So this particular week's information about August Osage County, the Tracy Letts play that won the Pulitzer Prize 2 weeks ago, it recouped its $2.5 million investment. It is technically a hit. So, the initial production.
What I want to know is, did they recoup the entire investment, including the move?
No. They recouped. See, August Osage was a hit, but it had to move out of its original theater. So, they said instead of closing it, they're going to move it. They moved it to a different, smaller theater. Yeah. Because the theater they were in was booked for something else. So, they
moved
recouped.
From the Imperial to the Music Box.
I'm sorry?
They moved from the Imperial to the Music Box.
To the Music Box. To make room, I guess the Imperial needed.
Billy Elliot's coming in.
Big musical coming, the Elton John musical coming next year. So August Osage County recouped its initial opening investment, doesn't have anything to do with the move that they're currently making. But hey, it's apparently the first show of the season to recoup its investment. And the season's now over.
And it's a play.
And it's a play, yeah. As well as a $2.5 million, whereas musicals cost anywhere from $6 to $10 million now or more.
And let me tell you something. That was some set.
For yeah,
that was a
neat.
Big set.
Yeah. Okay, now, also staying off-Broadway, the York Theatre Company has announced that its next season is going to start in September. People were pretty much expecting this. They had done in a reading series a musical that had been called So Long, 174th Street.
Oh, the musical version of
yes, Carl Reiner's.
Wait, oh my God, I did it in, everyone did it in high school.
Carl Reiner wrote the book,
yes.
And the movie, directed the movie.
Give me the first word.
Enter.
Enter Laughing.
Enter Laughing, yes. So people really, really like the readings that they did. So now it's going to be on the actual York Theatre schedule in September. It's got a book by Joseph Stein, who did Fiddler on the Roof, and Stan Daniels. Do you know what Stan Daniels is best known for?
No.
Stan Daniels created, I think actually Daniels did the music for this. He was the guy who wrote the theme song for Taxi. I'm assuming the music sounds a little different for the show. But anyway.
Enter Laughing in a cab.
Right. Well, yeah. You know, Enter Laughing many New York City cabs these days. So Stuart Ross, who created Forever Plaid, will direct that. And then also at the York Theater in November, they're doing a show called Vaudeville Man, about an old tap dancer from years ago called Jack Donahue. And let's see, Lynn Taylor Corbett will direct and choreograph that
one.
Nice. Now, here's a show that's coming. There's a lot of off-Broadway stuff right now. This is coming in July. I'm sorry, but this show sounds like 20 different kinds of suck. Remember when a couple of years ago they had John Davidson and Morgan Fairchild in a political comedy play? Like they were candidate kind of things. And
no, I don't remember that. I remember them in State Farm, or him in State Farm.
State Fair.
Sure.
Well, here's the cast. Tony nominee Anita Gillette and MASH veteran Jamie Farr are going to be in Flamingo Court off Broadway. Yes, there are 3 one-act plays about people.
Poor Judge Judy's out of a job.
This is about your stepmother. It's about 3 one-acts about people living in a Florida condo. It's like we all thought the Neil Simon era was
kind
of over.
You know what that reminds me of?
What?
What was the one that came to Broadway about the dancing?
Yes. Something in Steps. Right? In Three Steps with David Hyde Pierce, who was supposed to be...
No, it wasn't David Hyde Pierce.
He was supposed to be in it, and then he begged off. And he's like, I'm not going to...
Mark Hamill.
Yes.
And,
Seven Dance Lessons and
Steps. Six Dance Lessons, 6 weeks. Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Well, it's not fair to criticize a show that you know nothing about, and yet,
feels like a bomb to me.
Now the guy...
Jamie Farr must have left his Vegas gig. Hosting the game show event.
I guess so. He wants to do a little off-Broadway here. Maybe he has a summer off. The guy who wrote these one-act plays, filling in Luigi Creatore. Do you know what he's best known for?
It's not Jewish humor.
He wrote a not bad one-act play that I saw. A not bad one-man play that I saw called The Man Who Shot Lincoln. But that's not his most famous thing. He wrote the adaptation of the song, The Lion Sleeps Tonight. He took the South African Mbube and turned it into... That's him. He's written another play. And so it's going to star Jamie Farr and Anita Gillette in July off-Broadway.
Gillette in July.
Gillette in July.
And what theater is it coming to?
I don't remember. I didn't write that one
down.
I'm
sorry.
But it's off-Broadway. It's a commercial off-Broadway run. Now, speaking of...
And what's it called?
Flamingo Court.
I just hear that all those judge shows, boom, boom. Welcome to Flamingo Court, where Jamie Farr, Suze, Anita Gillette are being horrible in off-Broadway play.
Ooh. I'm sure they'll be fine. It's just something so skeevy about the whole thing.
Let's go see that one.
Well, definitely. Also, something I would like to see, there's a benefit, May 21st and 22nd, a week or so from now, Eric Bogosian is doing a benefit reading of some new monologues of his called Bitter Honey at the Public Theater, and the proceeds are going to help the Labyrinth Theater. Tickets They go up to $125 for VIP seats, but they start at $25. So not too bad.
Where are you going to sit? What seats would you like to sit in?
I'll be outside. I'll be watching from the rooftop, looking in through the chimney, trying to catch a glimpse of their
You'd
head.
You'd be going out there going, is someone going to put this up on YouTube?
But for more information, go to labtheater.org. Okay, a couple of quick things before we get to some reviews. The fourth annual WGBB Tony Awards special. Yay!
Woo-hoo.
Saturday, June 14th, 2008. It's the day before the Tonys. We're going to be here 7:30 to 10 p.m. I will be hosting. Jeff will be co-hosting along with New York Post columnist Michael Riedel.
And I heard some bad news about this.
What's up?
I heard there might be a quiz.
There'll be quizzes. There will be giveaways. We're going to give away two tickets to the Broad Hollow Theater's opening night of The Boyfriend, a very fun old-fashioned
comedy. A roaring 20s musical comedy.
Yeah. Plus, we're going to give away some packages of like cool stuff.
And all sorts
Broadway
of other
shows
stuff.
Now. Yeah, it's going to be neat.
We're just getting in stuff galore.
So, and we'll be playing show tunes from Xanadu and Young Frankenstein and from some other shows of the season.
This show will be so gay, even if it's not gay, you're not gay, it's going to turn you gay.
Yeah, maybe. Perhaps. And we'll be interviewing critics and asking for their predictions about who's going to win the Tonys and even get a couple of Tony nominees, too. It's the WGBB Tony Awards Special, our fourth year doing it, Saturday, June 14th, 7:30 to 10 p.m. We do a nice job on this, and it's a really special
evening.
If we
do say so ourselves.
I'm serious. I'm very proud of what we do.
It is a great show.
Thank you.
I mean, anyone who even likes theater should listen to the show. It's a good preview for the Tonys. It'll give you a little bit so you'll have some background as to the Tony nominees and winners the next night. And I think you'll be pleasantly surprised if you hang on there.
Yeah.
And you might win something, because actually, I hear there are going to be a lot more gifts than we know about.
Well, a few. No, we're not going to spend the whole time giving stuff away. But
No. But we'll give, hopefully something every half hour at least.
Something like that.
Yeah.
Probably about three or four gifts in total. So anyway, don't just tune in for that. But if you want to tune in for that, okay.
Fun and prizes.
The WGBB Tony Awards special. And just also want to remind you that I'm going to be on the air on Wednesday morning at about 7:40 a.m. on WVTL this Wednesday with my good friend Bob Cudmore. Bob Cudmore Show. He has me on every once in a while to talk about the theater. And it'll be shortly after they've announced the Tony Award nominees. So catch me this Wednesday morning on WVTL. You can do that online, too, and listen on the Internet. They're coming out of upstate New York. Anyway, time to do some reviews, but not before we play this little commercial for Performing Arts Insider. Remember, it's only $115 a year. There's a lot of big, big, big savings off the regular subscription price.
And remember, if you have a party with Fancy Schmancy, you save $50 more.
Wait, $50 off your thing, yeah. We'll work that out. And anyway, performingartsinsider.com for all that information on the magazine. Now, Jeff and I both saw a new Broadway musical that may be up for a couple of Tony Awards.
It would be a musical.
What?
A musical.
Or for you, I guess it was a snoozical. But yes, I liked it. This is a show called A Catered Affair, which has a book based on, look at the pedigree on this thing. It was originally a TV show that was scripted by Paddy Chayefsky,
yes,
the guy who did Marty and The Network. And the movie had a screenplay by Gore Vidal. And now it was adapted by Harvey Fierstein, the one and only, the Harvey.
Because after you think of Paddy Chayefsky and Gore Vidal, Harvey Fierstein's the next on the list, isn't he?
Come to think of it, yeah. You know, yeah. I can't think of anybody else who would be more appropriate. And the score making his Broadway debut is John Buccino, best known as a cabaret songwriter up until this point. And he's playing at the Walter Kerr Theater, features Faith Prince, Tom Wopat, Harvey Fierstein himself as the literally funny uncle, in all senses of the word.
He is the confirmed bachelor uncle.
Yeah, exactly. But he has most of the comic relief, such as it is, and he's also the gay uncle. So it's like the funny uncle in all senses of the word. And he's gay in a way.
You talk so queer about that.
Woohoo! But it is, I mean, someone also said to me that this is supposed to be in the early 1950s, and yet he's already too out for that era.
Oh, yeah.
And he wouldn't be talking like that, and he wouldn't be saying things like he would, or, you know, it was already a 1990s sensibility on 1950s era.
Yeah.
But, okay, that's a little problem with the show, but I like that.
There are bigger problems with it.
Well, what was your problem with A Catering Affair? You know what? First of all, tell the story. Tell what it's about.
It is a story of, the story starts with parents coming back from Washington, D.C., where their son, who's been killed in battle, has been honored.
Mm-hmm.
And the father decides that they're coming into some money because they're going to get death benefits for the son.
Mm-hmm.
And the father wants to buy, he owns a one-third share of a cab in Manhattan. He wants to, and one of the other owners wants to sell out. So he and the second owner want to buy the third person out because he's retiring.
Okay. Right.
So, and then everything's going along well, and then the daughter decides that she wants to get married to this guy because her friend is literally has to get married. She's pregnant. She has to get married, fly to San Francisco, and they need someone to drive the car out to San Francisco.
Drive their stuff over. And she figures, the daughter figures, this is a perfect time. She'll go with her boyfriend. They're already sleeping together, although she's not pregnant. And they'll get married.
They'll just have a small affair, a small little ceremony, a town hall,
right.
And then their honeymoon will be driving the car out to California,
right. And then have a little honeymoon in California, drive back because she's got 3 weeks vacation
that's
from
right.
work.
They were going to fly back because
That's how they were going to do. So anyway, they want to keep it small and simple
and inexpensive.
And inexpensive, you know, because the family has no money. But the mother is kind of upset about this because she wants to give her only daughter.
Well, the mother, in a very poignant song, and probably the best song of the whole thing,
yeah.
The mother has an attack of, like, the guilt that they did everything for the son and look where they left it. And this poor daughter has been given nothing all her life, and that now they have some money, and she has some, there's a joyful occasion coming up in her life. Why shouldn't they give her a wonderful wedding, at least for one day in her life.
And that is the best song in the show, by the way. That was I picked that out too.
It's like, a great song.
So why didn't you like it?
Well, the problem was it was always the same. I told you it was like musical oatmeal.
Mm-hmm.
The whole none of the songs were they were distinguishable, but really it was the same. It was very slow. I didn't really like the book. I thought the use of that Greek chorus that was very not even it's been overdone before, and it was just an easy way out.
To me, I understood where people could have been. This is the kind of show where if I were in the wrong mood, I would have been looking at my watch, bored, going like, "Oh my god, this song sounds just like the other one."
It is. It's very true. I just don't like. But they didn't have one up moment in the supposedly up show.
That laughs, and there were good times. But
as a matter of fact, I think Laurie Wilmer had one of the other good songs where the in-laws sang about, you know, how important it was the family.
Oh, well, yeah. But
I thought that was a nice song, too.
Yeah. No, you're talking to someone who liked the show.
Yeah.
Because I thought that even though the score was not exciting, it was all of a piece. It sounded the same, but then again, it was creating a tone and maintaining it, and this milieu.
Oh, please. Everything was beige. I mean, the set was beige. It was like, was beige, beige, beige. That best describes the whole thing. I thought it was
I think
90 minutes of blech. It was
you weren't touched. You weren't whatever.
It moved me a little.
Yeah.
But I thought it was just the whole story could have been told to me in 15 minutes and I'd be over it.
Right. Or maybe 57 minutes in a television with a Goodyear tire commercial in the middle or something like they would have done on.
I mean,
Playhouse 90.
It just didn't do anything. And Harvey did so little with the book. I didn't think anything. And if anything, he tried
to make himself, because he always has this motion, his hand to his chest.
Yeah.
I was I'm going to be the good...
Character was a problem, because he, as much as it was very tonally slow and kind of sad, he was trying to make it about the uncle, and it's not.
Right.
And especially at the end when he's, like, narrating and giving the audience some kind of aphorism to go home with. It was like, Harvey, it's not about you.
I know.
That bothered me. Yeah.
That was one of the worst things, and I like Harvey.
I love her. I love Harvey Weierstein, and you know, he's there on some level. We're supposed to like him and have him for comic relief. We want him to be like the up guy, but at certain points, it's not right. He's doing too much, or as I said, he's being too quote unquote out for that time period, or just being too whatever for a story that he's peripheral to.
But and but he is the center that he goes by. He says hello to all the women on the stage. Everyone knows him. It's like it's not about him.
Yeah, yeah. That was a problem. But would you say? I mean, I know someone who hated it the first time they saw it, and went back and saw it again and kind of liked it. Do you think that could happen for you if you saw it again? No, you wouldn't. You were just
happy. I'd go back and I'd try it.
Good for
well, okay. I doubt it. I'd always give it a second chance. But no, I was in a fine mood. I was ready to like the show.
Hmm.
I really wanted to like the show. I was all up for it. And then it just disappointed.
Okay. That's fair. That's right.
It broke
for me
down.
I was in the mood for it. I understood what to expect from it. And I kind of wanted to give it the benefit of the doubt because so many people were like, and I did. And I was touched. I liked it.
Maybe what happened is you had low expectations.
Yes.
See, I said, oh, Harvey Fierstein, Faith Prince, Tom Wolpat, A Catered Affair. Oh, it's going to be great. I can't wait to see that.
Good point.
And I've been looking forward to it for a good 6 to 9 months.
And then, yeah, and then when
I got that.
Yeah.
I got 90 minutes of oatmeal. You know, it was like, ew, I don't even think it was 90 minutes.
Yeah, it was. It was actually an hour 40. So.
Oh, really?
Yeah. The other show that I did want to talk about, because we're not really going to get a chance to talk about it, is a show that opened and closed in one night, so I'm kind of lucky. I guess I saw it in previews.
I think I'm kind of lucky because I didn't get to see it at all.
Bory Days. Because it left in bored days. At
it
the
was bored, D-A-Z-E.
Yeah. I mean, I'm sorry. People really tried to be kind to it. Everybody was saying, oh, how awful the critics were going to be, and how, you know, the New York Times was going to kill it, and how the major critics are just going to be so nasty and snotty. I'm telling you, the critics were kind. They were saying, these guys, they'll have a future on Broadway one day, the guys who wrote it, these young people in their 20s, and there's a little promise here, and, you know, they just should have been workshopped more. It's the producer's fault for bringing this to Broadway and not doing it more somewhere else first, or giving it a shot in a small theater. Okay, fair enough. They were being nice. It stank. It was boring as hell. They needed to work on this in a big way.
Now,
and
you know,
they did not.
My partner on the TV show, Charles Gross, also hated this show. He told me.
He hated Glory. He saw Glory Days.
He hated it.
Yeah.
He thought it was the most boring thing ever.
Not the most boring thing ever. There were pockets of humor.
He said they came in, they said, one of us is gay, but we're not telling you which one. And they alluded to, I don't know, that's what.
No, that's not really what happened. I mean, that one is, but it comes out pretty quickly. And then that's like one of the big deal things of these four college friends, except the other might be bisexual. It's like so old news and nothing exciting and nothing. And you want to talk about a plot, there's no plot. There's no plot.
Maybe they should talk to Harvey.
If Harvey got a hold of the book, it would have been a 10 times better musical. And certainly Care Affair was 10 times better than Glory Days. So, you know what? They are talented to an extent, and maybe they can write some pop songs or something, but they just did not belong.
How was
dull. It was kind of like really generic, kind of bland. I can like. There was one song that everybody, all the critics said was pretty good. It was the one about where the kid's going and finding out, you know, going across America and finding he's gay. Except that song's been written already once by William Finn, you know, Hitchhiking Across America. And then the guy in a class act wrote a song just like that. What was his name? The Ed Kleban wrote a song about going across and finding he wasn't gay, but he found out something else. I'm sorry. I really found. Except for the actors.
Now, was there a cast of four only?
Yep. Four guys on these bleachers. There's no set to speak of, just these bleachers and lights behind them. So there's nothing to look at.
Yeah.
There's no other characters, nothing to do. You get a nice little sense of camaraderie among these young guys.
Do they use the stage at all?
No. There's no stage to use. It's risers. It was bleachers.
No, but square. I assume they didn't make it a full circle. The risers were in the back.
No, it was most of the set. It was them sitting on benches in a football scene.
It's a thrust stage.
The
stage comes out, and it had probably the risers were in the back, because it's a three-quarter round, and then they had that projecting thing, the projected thrust.
No, there's a little playing space, but they played most of the show on those damned risers. They didn't do anything. Yeah. They just walked up and down and sat on the bleachers.
And this also started in a regional theater, which got great reviews.
Well, what happened was it opened at Signature Theater. They saw promise in it, and then suddenly Circle in the Square opened up, and they said, let's bring it in. And it was just a mistake. And it's, I wish the guys well, but, you know, and I feel bad for them because, and I'll tell the story real quick. I was, I once actually somehow got an audition for the Lehman Engel BMI workshop as a lyricist. And I didn't know anything really about Broadway back then. And I was like, oh, go, I'll see. You know, I didn't even study, but I just, someone got me an interview and I figured I can write lyrics because I was writing pop songs at the time.
Mm-hmm.
And I did not understand how different writing popular songs in the Bob Dylan and the folk idiom and stuff like that was from trying to write Broadway music. Mm-hmm. I learned that day.
They,
I got a lesson real quick because I showed them my lyrics. And I, oh, these are clever. These are, it's got nothing to do with what Broadway is.
Right.
That's what these guys have to learn before they even set foot on a Broadway stage again.
Before they set Horton foot on that stage again.
No guts, no glory, inside.
And no glory days.
Inside Broadway. We've just been inside Broadway, thanks to TotalTheater.com and Performing Arts Insider.
It's 1981. My mother passed away, and so it was a tough show. I was very young when she died, so it's tough. I have memories, but they're really quite private.
Oh, okay.
And they're quite, it's the memories of a little boy and his mother. That's all.
I have memories of my mom because just saw her over Passover, and I love her very much.
And you took her out to breakfast last week.
Yeah, that's true too. That's right. We went out to a nice little thing at the Lido Deli out in near Long Beach. We would have gone out to the beach too, but I had to get to New York and see a show. That's the story of my life.
And you took your mother-in-law too, so you might as well give a shout out to her.
Well, oh yeah, of course, Joyce's mom, definitely, and to my aunt Bonnie, and to my aunt Esther, and to Deborah, just to all the moms in my life.
Congratulations!
Yeah. We're going to give the worst person in the world award to Jeanette Christos of the Tri-County Humane Society in Florida. If you missed the Little Big Time, you know, the 10 o'clock show tonight with Jeff and myself, then you missed the whole story about what these people did to an old woman and her dog.
They stole the dog?
Yeah, pretty much. They cheated her out of a dog. As Bob Dylan put it, they cheated her with a fountain pen. Really, really, you know, nasty, nasty stuff. So, Jeanette Christos, on you.
Boo.
Anyway, it's 12:06 a.m. on WGBB Freeport. We have to kind of get out of here.
It's gospel time.
So let's thank our sponsors. Navah Market, 1239 Broadway in Hewlett, open
yummy,
7
yummy.
Days a week.
Very yummy.
Yummy, yummy stuff from Eastern European delicacies. Tell Stephen that Dave sent you, please. Fancy Schmancy Balloons, 797-3229 is the phone number, 797-3229. What was that price? It was like
$462.50 for a full party package.
I mean, huge party package.
And if you subscribe to Performing Arts Inside at the same time,
yeah,
we will take another $50 off, thus lowering your price on the Performing Arts Insider to next to nothing.
Kinda. In a weird way. But anyway, think of that. Just over $400, and you've got all the balloons, centerpieces, everything you need for your party. That's
and you'd have the Bible of Broadway.
Yeah, that too. Amazing. Amazing, amazing. Hewlett Minuteman Press, also amazing, because every Dave's Got My Listener gets 10% off any job, big or small, at Hewlett Minuteman Press.
And they're so good, they put Lohmann Shoes out of business.
That's right. Maybe they'll expand into the empty Lohmann Shoe store. That'd be cool. Get a bigger Xerox machine. And Performing Arts Insider, the Bible of Broadway. Go to performingartsinsider.com to find out more. Reminder to everybody, please watch.
Wait, we didn't talk about MortgagesRock.com.
MortgagesRock.com, MortgagesRock.com. Where you can either get a mortgage or find out how to become a mortgage broker. Now, everybody make sure to listen to Shalom Dammit.
Ooh.
Watch Shalom Dammit every Wednesday and Friday morning
on Cablevision.
7:30 a.m. on channel 115. Close. You're almost there. Well, if you flip around the dial, you'll find it. Wednesday,
that's
Friday,
what I do. 114, 117, 112.
Channel 115. And also Sunday afternoons on Manhattan Neighborhood Network, if you're listening in New York, on channel 67. 1:30 in the afternoon, Sundays, for Shalom Dammit with Rabbi Saul Solomon. And, of course, you can watch him anytime on YouTube.com. Look for Shalom Dammit or Saul Solomon.
You know, they could also look for Two on the Hour on
Yeah, that's the show you and Charlie Gross do on Manhattan Cable, where you review theater. Charlie Gross and Jeff Goodman in Two on the Isle. Look for it on YouTube.com. Want to give a shout-out and a mazel tov to Ray Jessel, a guest on this program last year. He's
That was Georgie Jessel's grandson?
Oh, no relation to Georgie. But he's a very, very funny songwriter and a very good songwriter, too, a Broadway writer. He won a Mac Award So congratulations to him for musical comedy or impersonation.
A big whoop-de-do to you.
Reminder that I'm going to be on WBTL this Wednesday morning at 7:40 a.m. on the Bob Cudmore Show, talking about the Tony nominations that will have come out the morning before. Want to give a shout-out also to Jeffrey Sweet, one of the guests on this program. On May 14th, his book is being published, The Value of Names and Other Plays by Northwestern University Press.
Good things happen to people who show up on the show.
Exactly. And he's got a new play called Court Martial that's probably going to be playing the New Federal Theater in June of 2009. So congratulations to him. And everybody catch Gary Lucas Friday, June 20th at the Bowery Poetry Club with his band Gods and Monsters.
And also don't forget to look for Charles Gross and his play, How I Found an Affordable Apartment on the lower, on the Upper West Side of Manhattan Without Really Trying.
That's coming in July, right?
June or July
at the Midtown International Theater Festival.
Correct.
Now, if you have any questions or comments about this program, please email davesgoneby@aol.com, davesgoneby@aol.com, or check my website, davesgoneby.org. Remember, you can hear recent episodes for free of Dave's Gone By at AM 1240, WGBB.com. They're podcasting now. Yay! And look on the WGBB website for the other show I host, the music show that I do on this station called Filler Up. You just have to find it somewhere on the schedule. Well, love to you, Mom. Love to my beloved wife, Joyce Weil.
And the kids.
And our doggies and our froggies and all our potatoes. Yes, yes. Coming up in the weeks ahead on this very... We have some unbelievable guests. We've got the return of Bruce Kluger.
I don't believe it.
Who is the co-author of a very funny satirical book called Young Dick Cheney. And he's also constantly writing for, like, the Huffington Post and USA Today, places like that. We've got Christopher Shaw, who is a contributor to the book Headless Body and Topless Bar.
And also the grandson of George Bernard Shaw.
No, he's not the grandson of George Bernard Shaw. But Headless Body is a compilation of headlines of the New York Post, like their best and funniest, goofiest headlines. We also have Charles Bloom, who is a cabaret and theater composer and lyricist, who is really up and coming.
And the brother of Judy Bloom.
No, stop that. No, he's not. Don't even spell it the same way. And really, really cool. This is exciting. You make a McCoy joke. Go ahead. You will. Because Juliana Hatfield, rock star, singer-songwriter, is also going to be in the neighborhood in the weeks ahead. She'll be playing at Joe's Pub on May 21st.
She married a cousin.
That's right, Mr. McCoy. There you go. Juliana Hatfield. Anyway, really, really cool guests coming up on Dave's Gone By, but that's all in the future. Tonight, we gotta go. So, all you mothers out there, it's now time for us to leave the womb of WGBB, but we will crawl right back in again next Sunday, May 18th, 2008, with the 273rd episode of Dave's Gone By. Until then, don't miss your days going by. This is Dave Lefkowitz.
And Jeff Goodman.
Wishing you good night.
And we love our mothers, so happy Mother's Day.
And gone by. Well,